Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome to Beyond the Matrix with Rod Bryant and Jerry Gordon here on Israel News Talk Radio. Unplug, strap yourself in, because you are about to move beyond the Matrix.
Thank you so much for joining us on Beyond the Matrix. I'm Rod Bryant, and we have a fantastic show lined up for you today, especially because of the news of things heating up between Iran, the United States, and Israel, and even, you know, I would say the European countries are getting involved as well. So we have an amazing guest that we've had on several times, Mr. Ken Timmerman, and we're going to be talking about that situation there. Jerry, why don't you give us a setup, tell people who Ken is, so that we can tease the audience here.
Well, firstly, Ken is a best-selling author of books about the coming Iranian nuclear problem. Way back in 2005, 2006, he's blowing the whistle on the shadow warriors in the intelligence apparatus here in the United States who gave faulty data to our leaders. But most importantly, Ken is a guy who knows and has known how things operate in Iran. He's brought to the fore not one, but two out of the three defectors who have given massive information about what the intentions and capabilities are of this Islamic State. And as he points out, Iran is the first Islamic State, mm-hmm. way ahead of the pact in terms of ISIS.
And what he's going to point out in the show, that they declared war, this regime declared war on the United States way back in 1976, and that we have never really responded. But the response that we are pulling up now seems to be different. Why? Because Jerry and I, well, along with Ken Timmerman, are going to explore what this latest defector who was ahead of the Republican Guard in Tehran. And he is going to, this guy is spilling the beans on what's really going on. And so we have a show that you don't want to be unplugged from. You want to have a notepad, write some information down, because we have an exciting show for you. We were sponsored officially by Torah Learning Channel. You can find it on the internet, TorahLearningChannel.com. Jerry and I will be right back with Ken Timmerman right after these messages.
Hello, I am Walter Bingham. If you want to hear the news behind the news and the true perspective on world affairs, then the Walter Bingham File is the program for you. We bring you interviews with the movers and shakers, political commentaries, and on-the-spot reports of events as they happen. All here every Tuesday, 4 p.m. Israel time, 9 a.m. Eastern time. And it's all archived on our website. Make it a date.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio.
And we're back from the break. Thank you so much. I'm Rod Bryant along with Jerry Gordon, my amazing sidekick and producer. And we have again with us Mr. Ken Timmerman, who is in France right now, winding down the evening. But we have some really important questions to talk about in light of some of the latest news that has been going on in the Middle East and with some of the ramping up of American assets in the country. So, Jerry, I'm going to throw it to you first to ask the first set of questions.
Ken, why has Iran's Islamic regime raised the stakes confronting the U.S. in the Persian Gulf?
Look, the Iranians are troubled. They feel the pressure. They feel the pain from the Trump administration sanctions. This is what Obama freed them from. Right. And now those sanctions are being reimposed. When the Iranians are wounded, they attack. This is typical in the Middle East, and they're behaving as typical Middle East players. When they are wounded, they attack. They attempt to throw their adversary off. They attempt to make people believe that they are actually the strong horse when in fact they are the weak horse and we are the strong horse.
So what are the realistic geopolitical objectives of the Trump administration in confronting Iran by dusting off this war plan reported by the New York Times that called it, curiously enough, an echo of the Iraq War? Is it protection of U.S. allies' Persian Gulf oil production? Is it disruption of renewed nuclear enrichment? And or is it fostering regime change? Or is it all of the above?
Well, first of all, anything that the New York Times reports has got to be, you've got to understand, it's got an element of fake news to it.
Yeah, a little bit suspect.
This is not an Iraq war plan dusted off.
Right.
Okay, first of all, that is fake news. That is the New York Times. That's what they and the Democrats, excuse me, I repeat myself, want you to believe. This is an entirely new way of dealing with the Islamic state of Iran, the first Islamic state, by the way, in the Middle East. They prefigure the Islamic state that we all talk about, ISIS. The Islamic state of Iran, which declared war on us on November 4th, 1979. And we just never responded. You know, I remember when I was a kid, there was a band whose names I can't remember now, and they said, what if they gave a war and nobody came? Well, the Iranians gave a war, and we didn't come to the war, and they kept on hitting us and killing our people and killing our people, and we never fought back. And here's the sad irony of that 1960s, you know, blissful idiocy. When they give a war and nobody comes, the ones who give the war win. And the Iranians have been winning that war for 40 years. Now, finally, the United States is fighting back.
Absolutely.
It's about time.
Ken, you know, I wish we had the statistics and the numbers here that show the amount of casualties that have been as a direct result of this war that we have not been participating in. I think of the 300 Marines, you just go down through the list, go all the way back to the time with the Delta Force and Carter trying to liberate our prisoners. The list goes on, and I really think that if we were able to quantify that, I believe it would blow most people's mind, because it's especially those of the millennial era, a little before and after, they have no clue of how extensive this history is.
Well, let me give you a couple of additions to that list, and you're absolutely right. The Marines in Lebanon, 241 Marines in 1983, 63 people killed in the first embassy bombing in April of 1983, which I was there when the embassy was bombed. What about the war in Iraq?
Right.
We know that there are more than 600 U.S. servicemen killed in Iraq by Iranian IEDs, these explosively formed penetrators, which are much more sophisticated than normal roadside bombs, that they gave to their Shiite militia friends. Well, that's 600 U.S. troops. Well, now those same Shiite militia friends of the Iranians, there are 100,000 of them in Iraq, and they are trying to open this land bridge between Iraq, Syria, into Israel, to the northern front of Israel. What about the Taliban in Afghanistan? The Iranians have been supporting the Taliban from the get-go. And here's the kicker, 9/11. Remember, I was involved in the investigation of the 9/11 attacks, the September 11th, 2001 attacks on America, World Trade Center, the Pentagon, right, and Shanksville in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
What people are not aware of is that the Iranian regime was found by a U.S. court of law, the Southern District of New York, to have played a material and significant role in the 9/11 attacks for their support to the al-Qaeda teams that carried them out. The Iranians helped them. The Iranians devised the plan, and the Iranians gave them material support all through it. And because of that, the victims of the September 11 attacks, that's 3,000 people, adding to your numbers, ticking off the numbers here, that's 3,000 more victims of the Iranians. They have sued in U.S. courts. They've won over $10 billion in judgments against the Iranian regime because of that.
Wow. And, you know, we didn't even list the numerous hijackings of aircraft that was in direct or indirect support of Iranian intelligence and funding. Now, right. With that being said, why don't we move up to this latest news? What prompted Iran to attack Saudi tankers and a Norwegian ship at the UAE port? What's going on with that?
Well, again, I think the Iranians are they are hurting from U.S. sanctions. And so they are trying to find some way to tickle the tiger. They want to provoke the Americans, to provoke us. They want to do damage to the Saudis. And they want to do it in a way which is not immediately attributable to them. In other words, that we can't blame them. We can't put our finger on them. They are saying that Houthi rebels, for example, flew the drones that hit into those Saudi pipelines. Horse pucky. There's no such thing as Houthi rebels who have drones that they make by themselves in their Silicon Valley of Houthi land in Yemen. It just doesn't exist. This is one of those fictions of the New York Times. It's fake news. The Houthi rebels are Iran Inc.
Right.
All right. They are Iran Inc. They attack Saudi pipelines. Why? Because the Iranians wanted to attack the Saudis to have the attack not be immediately attributable to mm-hmm. them, so they think that they can get away with it. They think there are not going to be any fingerprints. The Saudis are not dummies.
Right.
And this administration in Washington, they are not dummies either. And we all get it. And the United States, the Saudis, the Gulf allies, and even Europe, by the way, that's why Pompeo just made a side trip to Europe, they all get it. Iran is behind these attacks. And Iran is going to pay a price.
So do you think there are some really direct intelligence the administration received that Iran was threatening U.S. allies and assets in the region? I mean, or was it sort of a generic time-sensitive thing that could have been fed from Mossad, et cetera?
Well, I don't think it came from Mossad. And how long do we have before we go to the break? Because this is a very sensitive subject.
We have about 3 minutes.
Nuance here.
3 minutes, and then we can pick it up after the break.
Okay. All right. So what happened here? This is a very interesting story. We learned from Iranian media that the head of the IRGC, the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps intelligence, we learned that he was fired in mid-April by the Supreme Honcho, the Supreme Leader in Tehran. Didn't know why, and then he disappeared. And we learned that a successor was named, and then it became so convoluted and so politically caustic. You know, the guy became radioactive. His boss, the guy who named him, who was the head of the Revolutionary Guards, was also fired. Well, guess what we learned after that? Is that this individual, General Ali Nasiri, apparently was a defector. He came over to the United States and brought top secret intelligence on everything that the Revolutionary Guards was doing. Why? Because he was their intelligence chief. All of the secrets.
This is major.
He knew everything that they
were.
He knew everything they were doing, and with nuclear weapons, with ballistic missiles, their terrorist attacks, their plans in the Gulf. He knew about hostages. He knew probably about Robert Levinson, the FBI agent, former FBI agent, who's been held hostage for over 10 years. So this guy knew the whole shebang, and he went over to the United States. Wow. You think the Iranians don't have a problem? They've got a problem.
Okay, so this was not some intelligent guesswork. This was actually absolute direct information from the horse's mouth. That's amazing. I didn't know this.
I believe that's the case. And look, I've worked with Iranian defectors, high-level defectors, for many, many, many years. I've been involved personally in the defections of previous senior defectors, including a deputy minister of defense, a guy who was the head of the Revolutionary Guards networks in Lebanon. I was not involved in this one. I can tell you, I was not involved in this one. But as I read what's coming out in the public media, I understand what's going on behind the scenes. And this guy came out with stellar information, and it immediately led, and I give credit to the administration for this, it immediately led to a response by the president, by the Secretary of State, by the military, the deployment of the Abraham Lincoln and the carrier strike group to the Persian Gulf. So unlike what happened to the Obama administration.
Oh, absolutely.
And so unlike even what happened in the George W. Bush administration.
Well, let me tell you, with that kind of information, we realize that our president and his current administration really have things under control, thank God. We have to go to a break, so if Mr. Timmerman, if you wouldn't mind hanging around, we'll be right back after these messages. You're listening to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio. We'll be right back after this.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Tamar? She's sassy.
She's smart.
She's funny.
But she's also a real Jewish mother.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tamar Yonah. And yes, I can be all of those things, but at Israel News Talk Radio, I'm here to bring you the news stories and guests that you may not hear anywhere else. Join me live on air Sundays, Mondays, and Tuesdays for the most unique and bold talk radio in Israel.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
I appreciate you guys sticking around. We're with Ken Timmerman and my great co-host, Jerry Gordon. We just have been talking about Iran sort of ratcheting up, sort of saber-rattling, because they're feeling the pressure put on them. The last question we had talked about was this whole idea of what was going on with the attack, the Saudi tankers and Norwegian ships. Ken, you did an amazing job explaining that. Is there anything else that you wanted to throw in on top of that? You had talked about the pressures being put on them and the fact that they had gotten some really good direct information from a potential or from a person who's a defector, who was one of the head guys.
The United States got information from an Iranian defector, and a guy who was at the very, very top of the Revolutionary Guards. Mm-hmm. I think these attacks are just beginning. I think you're going to see more of them in the next coming days, coming weeks, but it's in the coming days. The Iranians think they have a wonderful... Look, the Iranians have a wonderful capacity of believing their own fake news. Mm-hmm. And they believe that the world believes that they weren't behind these attacks.
Right.
And in fact, everybody understands that they were behind the attack against the Saudi tankers in the Fujairah, in the United Arab Emirates. And everybody understands that they were behind the attacks by the Houthis against the Saudi oil pipeline. Mm-hmm. And I believe that they're going to be, I'm convinced that they're going to be more attacks like this in the coming days. And this will escalate. And the United States is going to whack them. And whack them hard. And they're not going to know what hit them. The last time that the Iranian regime had a direct military naval confrontation with the United States of America was in 1987. Mm-hmm. And we sank 2/3 of the Iranian Navy in about 12 hours. Okay.
And very few people even remember that.
Ken, teeing off that, do you think the Revolutionary Guard Navy in those little boats is capable of stopping a juggernaut like the Lincoln battle group?
Possibly, yes. And that's the new wrinkle on this, is that the Iranians have been practicing and co-developing with China a ground-based ballistic missile, which has been designed specifically to attack U.S. aircraft carriers. And it does it with terminal guidance provided by an overflying aircraft, not an AWACS sophisticated aircraft as we would have, but something.
But some kind
on the
of
line
targeting,
of what the Iranians
targeting
and the
aircraft
could have.
Right.
A smaller civilian aircraft with a radar in it, and it would track the aircraft, would actually track the aircraft carrier down on the sea and provide terminal guidance coordinates to the missile as it's flying, because. You know, it's not a simple thing. Aircraft carriers are going at phenomenal speeds. Most Americans don't realize how fast they're going because the real speed is classified.
Right.
Okay. These are really fast boats. They go really, really fast. And when they launch aircraft, they're already going at something like, you know, 35 knots.
Right.
And that's not their top speed.
Right.
So these are fast boats. They can turn much faster than anybody believes that they can turn. I've been on an aircraft carrier, and they are amazing technology, just amazing, amazing technology. So the Iranians have been practicing with the Chinese with this special land-based ballistic missile designed to attack and to sink a U.S. aircraft carrier. That is the big wrinkle in the story. Now, I'm sure that we have a defense against it and that Jerry's going to tell us about.
Well, the answer to that may be that a long time ago, you and I discussed how powerful an attack group is. You know, it's got cruisers, it's got frigates, it's got a submarine, as I recall, and it's got a virtual air wing on top, below decks. And it seems to me the wisest course of action is to stay off the Straits of Hormuz in the Sea of Arabia. And the reason I say that is because a certain ally of the current regime in Washington has positioned its submarines off the same channel. And that's Israel and its dolphins.
And we also have to remember that we have considerable amount of air assets that are in air bases all in the region around Iraq. I mean, Iran.
But you've got Diego Rivera. Remember that time-worn B-52 base mm-hmm. that was used during the Vietnam War? I don't know if the Qatari are going to permit us to use Ludine at this point in time.
Well, Azerbaijan, we have an air base there. There's a number of places. I mean, we're talking about a number of, from Jordan all the way over to the other side of Iraq. It's there. So, you know, I guess you would think that they would hit those assets first. That I'm talking about shore to ship missiles first. I don't know. You would think that'd be the case anyway.
Well, here's the thing.
Sure.
The Iranians are extraordinarily arrogant. They are sure that they could do great damage to us. And that when they do great damage to us, we will turn tail and run.
Mm-mm.
I say this from knowledge. Okay, the former head of the Revolutionary Guards, Mohsen Rezai, was convinced that once they attacked us in Beirut in 1983, the United States turned tail and ran, which is actually true.
Right.
We pulled our Marines out. We pulled our forces out of Lebanon. Why do I know this? Because his son defected to the United States and actually lived in my basement for 6 months learning English from Charlie Chan movies. and this was one of the many, many stories that he told me about his father and about the Revolutionary Guards. So they believe, and this has been handed down, it's not just Mohsen Rezai, it's the current commander of the Revolutionary Guards, Salami, who believes the same thing. If they hit us hard, we will retreat. We will not respond. And they have not understood that Donald Trump is a different type of president than we've had before. He will not turn tail and run. He will whack them, and he'll whack them hard.
Jerry?
Today, the Supreme Ruler said he doesn't want to have a war with the United States at this juncture. Of course, I can't put much credit in that as well. And he said if basically the U.S. attacks Iran or its assets, he's going to have war with Israel at this juncture. Now, having said that, it seems to me that Israel has spent the last few months undergoing training exercises in the eventuality that Iran would unleash its proxies, whether it's Hezbollah or, you know, those famous 100,000 Shia militiamen in Iraq and in Syria in that regard. And so therefore, Israel is poised at this moment, if in fact the U.S. engages in an activity against Iran and Iran chooses to move against Israel, that it is prepared to frankly reply. So the question to you is, why would Iran pick a fight with two of the best, strongest horses in the Middle East?
because they're arrogant,
right,
and because they believe their own fake news. They really do. And there's a third reason. It's because their Shiite eschatology teaches them that when they lose, they win. You know, it brings the Mahdi, the 12th Imam, to right. return and lead the armies of Islam to Israel. And this is, by the way, why they say if the United States attacks them, you just mentioned this, Jerry, they'll attack Israel. Well, that's why, because they are, their focus, their ultimate focus is on Israel. They want to bring the Mahdi back, the 12th Imam back. They believe that the United States will help them there by engaging them militarily, that they'll have a war with the United States, that they can destroy the United States. By the way, let us not underestimate their capabilities when it comes to an EMP strike in the United States, whether it's an Iranian strike or a North Korean strike. This is a takedown. Now, I could show you my chess board here in front of me, and it would be the king just falls over with an EMP strike. They are capable of doing that. So that is something that we also need to take into consideration. But the Iranians are arrogant. They believe that they have winning cards. They do not understand the resolve of Donald Trump, the president of the United States. They do not understand the resolve of the U.S. military forces. Their last encounter with our military face-to-face was when they captured a boat crew off of the shores of Kuwait, and they were whining and crying for mama on videotape for 48 hours. A pathetic, absolutely pathetic example was made of them by the Iranians. And that's what they think the whole U.S. Navy is about, all of U.S. forces are about. They're about to be sorely corrected.
The advantage we have here is that they are so arrogant that they honestly think that that is who our Navy and our armed forces are really like. So they're setting themselves up for a tremendous fall, a tremendous failure. We're getting ready to go into a break real quick. Jerry, do you have a final statement or comment? We have about a minute left.
Well, I think what Ken is telling us is really stunning, that yes. this is not going to be like 1987-88,
right.
where the U.S. basically creamed Iran. In fact, they took over their offshore platforms, as I recall. But mm-hmm. this is kind of a telling gesture of a conflict that, as he said, is ideologically driven.
Right.
They really believe the contract they signed with the 12th Imam will do it.
And that our response is going to be different than what it has been all the way back to 1976 and before. This response is going to be a renewed approach to how we deal with these terrorists. Don't go away. We'll be right back after these messages. You're listening to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Bentekoen. Each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany is but a memory, but in its place the world invented the phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
We're back from the break. Thank you so much for joining us here for the last segment of Beyond the Matrix. We are officially sponsored by Torah Learning Channel. Torah Learning Channel is found on the internet at TorahLearningChannel.com. You can also find it on YouTube, Torah Learning Channel on YouTube. And we have Jerry and Ken Timmerman. And why don't we go ahead and ask the next final segment of questions that we wanted to ask. Ken, thank you for joining us all the way from the lovely country of France.
Ken, why does Secretary of State Pompeo go to Brussels and hence to Sochi to talk to Mr. Lavrov?
Well, he had originally been scheduled to go directly to Russia, remember? And so this trip to Brussels was a side trip made urgently, and I think it was made urgently so the Secretary of State could directly communicate to the Europeans, who have been big proponents of the bad Iran deal, right, the bad nuclear deal with Iran, to communicate new intelligence to them that the U.S. has learned from this high-ranking defector who up until just a month ago was the head of the Revolutionary Guard's intelligence department. I mean, he has if not the highest ranking defector, one of the top three. Okay. And I was involved in the other two. So personally involved with the defection of the other two. This guy is right at the top of the intelligence matrix in Iran, came out with top secret intelligence, with documents we're led to believe from the public news reporting. And so it makes a lot of sense for Mike Pompeo to take a side trip to Brussels to give a in-camera briefing, in other words, a private briefing, not for the press, to his counterparts in Europe. And God bless him for doing it. Mm-hmm. And I must say, the Europeans have been so far good about not leaking all of the information that he provided them.
Doesn't it make you wonder what the conditions are that a high-ranking official like that would defect? I mean, it must be pretty bad. You have a job that's pretty secure at the top, right, and you're willing to pack up and leave. What does that tell you?
You know, that's actually a great question, Rod, because you're absolutely right. When you're at the top of the Revolutionary Guards or the top of the military or the top of the regime, you've got everything.
Everything.
Your children have everything. You live in a special compound. You have mansions that were built by people from the Shah's era. And your children go to very special schools. They have their Instagram channels for the children. They're called the Rich Kids of Tehran.
Oh, wow.
They're driving around in Lamborghinis and in Ferraris in Tehran. And their sons and daughters of people like this guy who just defected. So they've got it all. Money is not an object. I met one of these people. He came out and he said, well, I had an $18 million mansion. And I left.
Wow.
Why? Because he felt the regime was onto him for whatever reason and was about to arrest him. That's why they leave. They believe that they've been, for whatever reason, compromised, for real reasons or for fake reasons. It doesn't matter. I don't know if this individual, General Nasri, had been working for the United States before he defected or not. Maybe not at all. But he was led to believe that the regime was onto him. And that's why he left.
Okay,
why,
so it's not because. Okay, so it's not
because
it's not going because of they are highly patriotic, loyal people to the regime, and they not to the regime, to the nation, and they want to help deliver the nation out of the clutches of a wicked regime. They're just going because they're saving their own neck.
Rod, in the big scheme of things, yes, they leave because I know other defectors who have left. Yes, because they want to save their nation, the Iranian nation, and yes, they repent to a certain extent what they've done in the past. But the proximate cause,
mm-hmm.
that's what we're talking about.
Right.
The proximate cause for the date of departure is imminent death.
Right, right. Which makes sense.
Okay.
I would leave for that reason.
Yeah, that's right. They have been exposed for whatever reason, or they feel that they've been exposed, and it's just time to get out of Dodge.
Yeah. Jerry?
Ken, what are the prospects realistically if the U.S. has a tough up with the Iran regime that somehow the magic switch will be pulled and regime change could occur? I know that is the secret desire of Mr. Bolton, perhaps the secret desire of you and others who've been advocating for that, but realistically, could there be regime change if there's a dust-up?
Well, it's not my secret desire. I've talked about this publicly, and I've been doing it for over 20 years. It's a complicated subject, okay? It's a complicated subject. I've always, in the past, used the image of two clocks. The nuclear clock, how close are the Iranians to a nuclear weapon, and then the regime change clock, how close are the Iranian people to seizing power against the regime. I think today the nuclear clock has already reached midnight. They have nuclear weapons. So what do we need the Iranian people to do to get in a position to overthrow the regime through popular dissent, through a massive popular uprising? And what do they need in particular, and this is the most important thing, to defang the Revolutionary Guards? In other words, to keep themselves from getting killed by the Revolutionary Guards. And that is the real conundrum that everybody's facing today. And I have many, many friends working in the pro-freedom movement in Iran. They say, well, we're working on this. We're working on building bridges to the Revolutionary Guards, believe it or not, to ensure that there won't be a bloodbath when the regime goes down. Because one thing that the Revolutionary Guards and the opposition are both convinced of is that the regime is going down. What they don't agree on is what's going to happen afterwards.
Right, because
that is correct.
Yeah, the big thing is what kind of instability ensues after that. And we've seen it's really so broad, it's hard to even point out to one specific thing or even a two or three that could happen, right?
Right. I must say, all across the Iranian body politic, people are united about one thing, whether they're pro-regime, anti-regime, whatever. They all are united. They do not want Iran to become another Syria or another Libya. They don't want that level of destruction,
right,
lawlessness, chaos, and mass murder to happen in their country. So they are actively seeking for some solution, some transition from dictatorship to freedom, but it's not an easy thing.
Are these prospects going to affect what Israel does in the space of the next 2 to 3 weeks before a government is formed? Realize that Netanyahu has been given an extension for time to put together, or cobble together is the word, a working coalition. So if something happens before that happens, what then can Israel do?
Well, my understanding, and I have a long dialogue with senior officials in Israel about this, is that, look, Netanyahu is going to do what his predecessors have done for decades, put Israel's interests first. If Israel is attacked, he will respond in an appropriate manner, but he's not going to wait for a mythological beast to appear in Tehran called a moderate mullah. He is not going to wait for an impossible solution called a democratic revolution to occur in Tehran or elsewhere. He's going to do what he needs to do for the safety, the security of Israel and of the Jewish people. And I've got to say, I don't know Bibi Netanyahu very well. I've only met him once or twice, but he has played brilliantly against three adversaries on three borders of Israel. Israel is encircled by Iranian missiles to the south from Gaza, from the north from Hezbollah in Lebanon, and from the east from Syria. And yet he has managed to keep them all at bay. The worst these Iranians have been able to do so far is that latest barrage of 700 or 800 missiles from Gaza, which caused very few casualties. I mean, if you really think about it, very few casualties. And it reminds me of the 2006 war. I was in Israel during that. I was in Haifa, and then I was up along the Lebanese border and saw the amazing, just the catastrophe, the lack of preparedness of the Israeli tank crews and the Golani forces and the special forces of Israel. They didn't know what they were doing. They had no strategy. The government had no clue what they were going to do in 2006 against this Iranian onslaught. Today, I think, is very different. I think it's very different. I think Netanyahu has learned those lessons from 2006. In fact, it may have been the first time I met him. I don't recall if it's true, but I met him in 2006, in the summer of 2006, in a bunker in Kiryat Shmona, up along the Lebanese border, when he was in the opposition. He was not in government. And he was there talking to the town leaders, the elected council, municipal council of Kiryat Shmona, in a bunker because they were being attacked daily by Iranian missiles from Lebanon. And he says, we can't let this continue. We have to go forward and end the threat. Well, obviously, the government at the time did not end the threat. I think today, Bibi will end the threat.
I'm really hoping that you are correct, and I'd also am really hoping that the information that you've provided today is going to show that the United States' response to Iran is going to be a total different response we have had in the last 40 years. So you've been listening to Beyond the Matrix. Ken, thank you so much for joining us this evening. We've really had a blast. Can't wait to have you back home, and we'll do it again soon. You've been listening to Beyond the Matrix, and we'll see you next time at this same place here on Israel News Talk Radio.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at israelnewstalkradio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.